Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on deadly medicine when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton. He said, "There's no such thing at this date of the world's history in America as an independent press. You know it and I know it. There is not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid for doing similar things. And any of you who would be so foolish as to write honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of journalists is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes." Well, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and this New World Order. They're the men and families like the Windsors and the Rockefellers, the Bushes, the Bundys, the Carnegies, and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time for us to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and to survive this New World Order, this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about this Global 2000 and Bible prophecy and the New World Order, just call and order my 4-hour compact disc package. Now, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Send an email request for that free general law CD package. All right, last time we were talking about this thing called Tambacor. Tambacor is a drug that's been taken off the market now, but at the time, back in the 1980s and 90s, it killed about 50,000 people, along with a drug called Encade, the two of them together. It's the reason I thought I'd share with you this information. It comes from a book called Deadly Medicine by Thomas J. Moore. In connection with Moore's book here, I got the International Forecaster. Came in over the email the other day. Now, I mentioned this International Forecaster. It's put out by Bob Chapman. Chapman's been a newsletter writer. He's an economist, what he is, and he writes newsletters. Lives down in Punta Gorda, Florida. And he had a section in here on Ritalin. I just happened to read that yesterday, and I said, well, that just kind of fits right in with this story that I'm covering this week on drugs. And 25% of the children in America are on Ritalin. or some other drug like it. It's probably not the only drug. Typically, when one company comes up with a drug, they'll call that Ritalin, and then some other company has the same drug, but they have hang a different label on it. They call it by a different name. It does the same thing. Now, why the Americans have come to such a state in our history, in our lives, that we believe that drugs are the panacea, I guess maybe it's because America has turned into a nation of drug addicts. We like cocaine, marijuana, and heroin, and I guess it just follows that we should be taking some other kinds of drugs. The old people of America, I remember I had an aunt one time, Aunt Floy was her name, and my God, Aunt Floy had every kind of disease that you could imagine, and if she didn't have it, she'd invent it. And she was taking pills and elixirs and elixirs and maybe a little liquors. And when you got down to old Floyd's house, you know, you'd go in there and she was a downer. She'd just talk about all of her ailments and all of her pills and doctor's visits and all the money it was costing her. I think she was probably a hypochondriac. But she probably really believed that she was sick. And that was back in the 50s when taking drugs was very unusual. When I was a kid, you know, we had all kinds of elixirs. My grandma, she had Vicks Vapor Rub and Mustard Plasters and all kinds of home remedies over there. But we didn't take drugs. We used things like herbs and food and spices and things like that. My granny would give us a warming tonic, and she'd have to warm us 2 or 3 times a year. But somewhere along the line, I guess about the 1950s, we started, we got to be a wealthy bunch of people. And then, you know, instead of having babies at home, and instead of having, you know, normal childbirth, there was a woman on television. And she had a cesarean. God, that just opened the floodgates to modern medical practice. And now about, what is it, a third now of babies born or born cesarean? Is it a third? Something like that. You know, we've gotten to the point where women can't have babies anymore. That's a medical, emergency now. And we got off into these drugs, and now we got into recreational drugs with the hippies and those marijuana smoking, cocaine snorting hippies of the 1960s have just turned into a druggy society. And now 25% of our children in public school, I mean, the nurse doles this stuff out. I mean, you're institutionalized in the public schools, and they tell you your kid, you know, can't sit still, so we need to slow him down, so let's give him a narcotic. I don't think great civilizations and empires are made out of drug addicts. I think this one's on the verge of collapse. But just in case you're one of those people that's got a child on Ritalin, or you're thinking about it, or you haven't thought about it, but you might want to, well, listen to this. Do you think that Ritalin is safe? Well, read what the Novartis company says about its own product. If your child's doctor or a child psychiatrist's diagnosis of your child and says that he's suffering from ADD or ADHD, and then recommends that you give your child Ritalin each morning before school in order to counter the negative effects of this ADD, ADHD, then you should be aware of all of the facts surrounding Ritalin. And instead of taking the advice of your doctor or anyone else as to whether or not this Ritalin is safe, why don't you read the packaging label that the Novartis company, it's N-O-V-A-R-T-I-S, Novartis company, puts inside of each box of Ritalin. Well, I did, and this is what it says. Ritalin is a mild central nervous system stimulant. The mode of action in man is not completely understood. But Ritalin presumably activates the brainstem arousal system and cortex to produce its stimulant effect. There is neither specific evidence which clearly establishes the mechanism whereby Ritalin produces its mental and behavioral effects in children, nor conclusive evidence regarding how these effects relate to the condition of the central nervous system. So if you think this drug has been tested thoroughly and that it's been proven to be safe and effective or something, here's the company that makes it, and they say, we don't know. We don't know. I've got a clue. Even the company can't verify that it's effective. And the company cannot verify that it does what the user is told that it is supposed to do by our doctor. The company can also not guarantee that these drugs will have a negative effect on the central nervous system of the user. In other words, in Novartis's own words, not enough research has been done to determine if Ritalin is safe or if it's even effective. Now, here's a drug that we're giving 25% of our children. It's a powerful narcotic drug. It's habit-forming. They call it an antidepressant. I think it's one of that group of antidepressants. We'll see as we read along here. And they say, well, we don't know what this stuff does. It's being prescribed. It's being recommended. Your doctor is going to tell you, oh, yeah, it's good stuff. Company that makes it says, we don't know. Why don't you ask yourself this question? Would you allow your child's foot to be x-rayed if the technician told you before the procedure that we can't be 100% sure that the x-ray will not cause your child's foot to develop a deadly disease over time, and if this happens, we may have to amputate it? We don't know. What if you picked up a chocolate bar in the supermarket and it said, the manufacturers of this product cannot guarantee that by eating this chocolate bar, a person won't suffer massive convulsions and die? Would you buy it? Would you give it to your child to eat? Well, the company that manufactures Ritalin clearly states that they haven't investigated fully as to how these stimulants may interfere with the central nervous system of the children that they're selling it to, and they're telling you in advance that these drugs have not been fully tested, nor are they guaranteed not to cause complications in the future. Nor do they even know fully about the mechanisms that causes the change in mental and behavioral effects in the user. I'll pause here for a moment. I'll tell the story. They've been giving vaccinations now to children. When I was a kid, I think you used to get a couple of three shots. I forgot exactly how many. And that got up to 5, 10, 15. Now they're 35 shots. By the time your kid's 5 years old, he's going to get 35 vaccinations. At the very same time, in 1950, this thing called autism was unknown. I never heard of autism. Today, it's an epidemic. I got 1.6 million children in the United States with autism. And there's been a lot of rumors. Well, gee, I wonder if it's caused by the vaccinations, by the mercury that's in these vaccinations. Except for one, I think they've been taking it out. But don't think about suing the pharmaceutical company. They're immune from suit. And here's the way these vaccines work. The legislature passes a law that says you got to have your kid vaccinated to take him to public school. Then when you go to the public school, they give you a form to sign. You sign the form, and if the kid develops autism or some other disease, in fact, a certain percentage of them die. About 100 children a year die from these vaccines. And they say, well, you know, we give out 50 million shots a year, 100 million or 200 million shots a year, so you know, if 100 die, you know that's acceptable. I guess it's acceptable if it's somebody else's kid that dies. If it was my kid, it wouldn't be very acceptable to me. Well, anyway, you can't sue these pharmaceutical companies, and the risk is on you. And so when something happens, they say, well, you should have known. You should have known something about this. So let's see if we can learn something. If your kid's on Ritalin and something happens, a kid dies or he has one of these side effects or something, that's your fault. That's your problem in life. And you're the guy that's responsible for it. So don't forget that. You are responsible. I go on to say here that the warnings continue. Sufficient data on safety and efficacy of long-term use of Ritalin in children are not yet available. By the company's own admission, the drug has not been fully tested sufficiently, and nobody can testify to the safety of this medication long term. One has to wonder that if the company who produces and markets these drugs isn't doing this research work to determine the long-term effects of Ritalin usage, well then, who does, or who's going to? Who has the ability and the financial resources to ensure that medicines approved for human consumption have no long-term negative effects other than the manufacturer? Is it going to be the FDA? Is it going to be your doctor? Now, if the manufacturer, Novartis, says that they haven't done this, then shouldn't we believe them and not buy their product? In the next line, we read this. It says, although a causal relationship has not been established, suppression of growth, for example, weight gain and or height, has been reported with the long-term use of stimulants in children. So your child will probably be stunted. Not probably. I shouldn't use the word probably, because we don't know if he probably will be stunted. Probably means that it's 50% or more. It means that we have noted that height and weight gain has been observed in children. That is, they haven't gained the height they should have, haven't gained the weight that they should have, and it stunts some children. Maybe it'll stunt yours. Instead of your child growing to be 6 foot two or three, maybe he'll be stunted to 5 foot three or four. Or maybe 5 foot eight or nine. You want your child stunted? So if they haven't done this, well, shouldn't we believe them and then not buy their product? In the previous sentence, Novartis claims that they have not done any research on long-term use of Ritalin to determine if it's 100% safe, or even 90% or 80% or 70% safe. They haven't tested it at all. This is an experiment on 25% of American children. And 10 or 15 years from now, maybe we'll be able to make an observation and come up to a definitive answer. One sentence later, they claim that a causal relationship between suppression of growth. Notice how they don't mention the growth of the child's brain, which one has to assume from age 7 on is still in the process of growing, and this has not been reported. So if it's going to cause a stunting of your child's physical growth, isn't this going to stunt your child's mental growth as well? Have you thought about that? Well, the Novartis people say, if you come back later and say that our child has turned out to be a halfwit, he's not very smart, and it was caused by this Ritalin, you don't sue us. We told you that when you bought the box. It's like buying a pack of cigarettes that says, hey, the contents may give you cancer. Don't blame us. Now, perhaps Novartis has done some long-term research, but only revealed a part of their results, and maybe they haven't told us about the part of their research that questioned whether their products are safe for long-term use. The warning continues. Clinical experience suggests that in psychotic children, administration of Ritalin may exacerbate symptoms of behavior disturbance and thought disorder. Safe concomitant use of anticonvulsants and Ritalin has not been established. Use cautiously in patients with hypertension. Blood pressure should be monitored at appropriate intervals in all patients taking Ritalin, especially those with hypertension. In most cases, children are not tested for any of these disorders or medical conditions. So despite the widespread claim that most of the medical establishment recommending Ritalin use that Ritalin is completely safe, it appears the company that manufactures Ritalin believes differently. And it's clear from the list of potential dangers that this drug, Ritalin, carries with it that the company has not done sufficient research on how these medications affect the body's central nervous system. And if it did, it would not use words such as may cause and has not been established. Now, if blood pressure needs to be constantly monitored during Ritalin use, there is a danger of something, which Novartis probably knows, but has decided not to put on its warning labels. So let's suppose that you've got high blood pressure, and you're taking Ritalin, and it pops a vessel and you have a stroke, or you have a heart attack and you die. You can't blame it on Ritalin. Could it be that the Ritalin will cause hypertension or high blood pressure? Could that be? How do we know it doesn't? Novartis doesn't, and they said, we have observed in clinical trials that it exacerbates hypertension and that you have to be cautious when you're giving Ritalin to somebody that has hypertension. Now, are you prepared to simply not know and hope these drugs are completely harmless for your children? The company which produces and sells these drugs has given the public plenty to be concerned about. Parents who take the decision to medicate their children with Ritalin should be equally concerned. Now, the company isn't finished warning parents of what their products may do to their children, or may do they don't know because they haven't investigated the issue fully. Human pharmacologic studies have shown that Ritalin may inhibit the metabolism of coumarin, anticoagulants, anticonvulsants, phenobarbital, and then here's a word that I'm not sure I can pronounce. Let me try it. It's diphenylhydantoin. And then there's another word here, primidone. And then there's phenylbutazone and tricyclic drugs, imipramine, clomipramine, disopyramine. The safety of using methylphenidate in combination with clonidine or other centrally acting alpha-2 agonists has not been systematically evaluated. So the pharmacological studies, that is the drug studies, have shown that Ritalin may inhibit the metabolism of. So let's suppose that your kid is on one of these other drugs over here for some other reason. And they come right out and they say, gee, if you're taking these other drugs over here for some other reason, then you take Ritalin, it may inhibit the effectiveness of those drugs. All right, so there's another warning for you to keep in mind. Not being a scientist, I don't know what the implications of these warnings are, but they sound as if they're serious enough to warrant further investigation. At least the Novartis company is warning you about them, aren't they? Novartis certainly has, or else they wouldn't have mentioned it on their packaging label, probably so that they could not be sued for not informing the public of these potential drawbacks. However, if most parents are like me, and they aren't scientists, these words have absolutely no meaning at all. Not only don't they have any meaning, I can't even pronounce them. Yet it sounds like these are a lot of potential complications related to this Ritalin use, and that the company is disclosing them so that nobody can come back to them years later and say, well, you never told us about these potential complications. Now, the instructions for use on the package then goes on to say, Ritalin should be given cautiously to emotionally unstable patients, such as those with a history of drug dependence or alcoholism, because such patients may increase dosage on their own initiative. So what they're saying here is, if I read this between the lines correctly, hey, this is pretty good stuff. And the nurse in the school has to dose this stuff out because the kids are out on the playground, and they're selling their Ritalin pills to other children. So it must be pretty good stuff, because they're actually black marketing the stuff out on the playground. So here's, you know, little Alice or little Johnny out on the playground. They're about first, second, or third grade, and they're out here selling drugs to one another. So now the school nurses have to dose it out. So you have to go down to the school nurse, and she'll give it to you and watch you take it. That's to keep you from selling it on the grounds. Isn't that just real special? So the instructions for use on the package goes on to say, Ritalin should be given cautiously to emotionally unstable patients. Emotionally unstable. Does this mean like Columbine kids, you know? I mean, you got some kid over here that's kind of unstable, and you give him one of these Ritalin pills. Does this make this guy come unhinged, fly off the handle, and go out and kill people? You know, when I was a kid, we didn't take any drugs, but we didn't have any school shootings either. We didn't have kids jumping up and running around the classroom while the teacher just grab you and slap the hell out of you and sit you down in your seat, and how's the end of that? You know why these kids are jumping up and running around? It's because you fill them up with sugar in the morning, you know, with Cocoa Puffs. And so these children are hyperactive because they're being stimulated with sugar. Sugar is a drug. We'll talk about that a little bit more tomorrow. That's not only a drug, but it's witchcraft. It's a refined substance, no longer a food. Now, you could go out here in the cane field and eat that sugar cane until you puked, and it wouldn't cause any adverse reaction. You can go down to Columbia and chew cocoa leaves until your teeth turn green, and it won't cause any ill effects. But we're turning these herbs that God gave us in Genesis 1:28-29 into drugs by refining them down so that the active ingredients in these plants we can get in super quantity. I remember a guy came in here to class one day and he had this funny can of soda pop. It said Jolt on the side of it. And I said, Jolt? I've never seen Jolt. What is that? And he said, this is Jolt Cola. Double the caffeine and double the sugar. Now, an ordinary can of pop has anywhere from 9 to 12 teaspoons of sugar in it. Refined sugar. Refined drug. And children are sucking these Cokes right out of the Coke machines in the schools. And then you're wondering why they're bouncing off the walls and flying off the ceilings. So to slow them down, now we give them the stimulant drug sugar, and then we got to give them a downer called Ritalin. So I guess it means that Ritalin, the drug, and alcohol abuse go hand in hand. And the label goes on to tell us a little more. It says, chronically abusive use can lead to marked tolerance and psychic dependence with varying degrees of abnormal behavior. What that says is that Ritalin is addictive. And frank psychotic episodes can occur. Careful supervision is required during drug withdrawal, since severe depression as well as the effects of chronic overactivity can be unmasked, and long-term follow-up may be required because of the patient's basic personality disturbances. Patients with an element of agitation may react adversely. Prescription should not depend solely on the presence of one or more of the behavioral characteristics. When these symptoms are associated with acute stress reactions, treatment with Ritalin is usually not indicated. Long-term effects of Ritalin in children have not been well established. Long-term effects. We don't know what happens. The student I was telling you about, he's a druggist. He was from New Jersey. And he said, to give me an illustration, he says it's common for mothers to come in with their children, and they'll have a prescription, you know, for Ritalin or some other child drug. And he says this one lady said to him one time, "Can you hurry up?" And the kid was over here just fidgeting something terrible. And the druggist looked at him. He said, "That kid is having drug withdrawal symptoms." And she said, "Yeah, could you hurry up with the prescription? He needs one right away." Little kids, you know, first, second, and third grade, and you mothers have those children on drugs, and you have turned them into dependent drug addicts in the first, second, and third grade. What kind of insanity is this? Well, my doctor recommends it. If your doctor recommended that you step off of the top floor of the Empire State Building, would you do it? If your doctor recommended arsenic, would you take it? I mean, you know, just because somebody is recommending these drugs because they've got a financial interest in it, does that mean that that you ought to do it? Just because we can and just because we do, does it mean that we ought to? I'm fully aware of what we're doing, but I'm asking the question, should we be doing that? Seemed like to me that 50, 60 years ago, we were a little better off without Ritalin and without all the sugar. See, what they've done here is they have marketed the soda pop so successfully, and the schools are getting paid off. See, the big sugar companies, Coca-Cola and Pepsi and so on, they go in, they pay big bounties. I mean, they pay millions of dollars to school districts who fund a lot of the school activities with the money that they make off of the soda pop that they sell in the schools. And so soda pop has doubled. The sales of soda pop has doubled over the past 20 years. And just coincidentally, diabetes has doubled over the past 20 years. Do you think that drinking all that soda pop and giving ourselves diabetes or giving your children childhood diabetes, do you think that's good? I mean, just because we can, should we? And is it because we can't tell our children no? Is it because we're such insipid parents, unable to say, no, you can't have the damn pop? Is your kid going to throw himself on the floor and have a big temper tantrum? Or fly off into an apoplectic rage? And you can't deal with that, and so you just give in to the kid and say, okay, here's your Cocoa Puffs, and here, put Coca-Cola on it instead of milk. Well, at least the company is honest. The company, Novartis, they're honest. And unlike your doctor who told you that the reason that your child should be medicated with Ritalin is because he or she has a chemical imbalance in the brain, Novartis recognizes that the drug is being given for behavioral characteristics which cannot be confused with chemical imbalances in the brain. They're also honest enough to inform us that they themselves have not investigated whether there are any long-term effects of Ritalin. Now, let me point something out here. Yeah, these children have chemical imbalances in the brain. No doubt about it. You've drugged them up with sugar, number one, and they've got this chemical imbalance, and so you're coming back and saying, well, let's give them another chemical over here and see if we can balance it out. So, in effect, what your doctor is telling you, oh my God, your kid has a chemical imbalance in the brain, so we've got to correct that with another chemical over here. Did it ever occur to any of us that maybe what we ought to do is eliminate the chemical imbalance in the brain? Or ask your doctor, if I give my kid this Ritalin over here, is it going to cure my child? And how long does it take for this cure to take effect? And when the doctor tells you, and he will, you know, most of them are pretty honest to say, well, no, it won't cure it. It'll just calm him down and it'll just treat it. Well, is this kid going to be like this all of his life? You know, if a kid had epilepsy and he was having seizures constantly, wouldn't you like to get the child over the seizures? I got a boy here, he's 42 years old, he's had epilepsy for 20 years. And he was on drugs, they gave him drugs. About 20 years ago when the kid was in college, they gave him a shot of something, cortisone, I think it was. And within 24 hours he was having epileptic seizures. So naturally, we just kind of put two and two together and said, geez, that cortisone over there probably triggered these epileptic seizures. Well, this went on for 20 years or so, and he's had epilepsy and had these grand mal seizures. And one day, back 20 years ago, his mother controlled those with diet. But he didn't like the diet. And so the doctor said, well, we can give you this drug and this will control the seizures. And sure enough, it did. The drugs that they gave him controlled the seizures. So the choice that he made when he was 20 years old was, I'll take the drugs and eat what I want. And he did for 20 years. And he went from about 160 pounds to about 260 pounds. And one day his heart wasn't working right and he was in bad health and one thing and another. And he got to be 40 years old. And so he woke up one day and he said, you know, these drugs don't work anymore. I have to take more and more of the drug to control the seizures, And it got to the point where he was taking so much of the drug that the drug was impacting his health. And they said, well, people with epilepsy don't live to be 75 years old. They die when they're in their, after about 20 years or so on these drugs. So knowing, though, that he was probably going to die after about 20 years on the drugs, he went back to diet. He's on a very strict diet. And he's controlling his seizures now with the diet, which is where he was 20 years ago before the drugs got him. But now he has to get the drugs out of his body, so he's on drug withdrawal. So he's got the withdrawal problem. Plus, he's got the same dietary problem he had 20 years ago. And what it was the cortisone, which poisoned his system. And that's what's happening with these vaccines. That's what's causing your autism. That's what causes this ADHD. That's what these soda pops and sugar is. You know, your body can only dispose, can only digest, can only detoxify 3 teaspoons of sugar a day. 1 can of soda pop has 9 to 12 in it. No wonder you people have diabetes. I've had people come to school here, and they'll be sitting here at the table, and they'll bring a whole 6-pack. In fact, it's better than a 6-pack. They'll bring in a cooler, and they'll have 20-ounce Cokes in there. And they'll take a Coke or a soda pop of some kind. You know, it doesn't have to be Coke, any kind of soda pop. Now, it's got about 1 teaspoon per ounce. So you take a 20-ounce, this guy's taking 20 teaspoons of sugar. And they'll drink 4 or 5 of those in a day. And typically, you know, these people, you know, they weigh, you know, 300 pounds or so. I mean, they're pretty chunky people. And then they wonder, well, why is it that that I'm overweight? How come I'm obese, eating McDonald's and drinking Coca-Cola? How come I'm in bad health? They'll wonder about that. So, despite the canard that we hear from so many physicians and child psychiatrists who claim Ritalin is completely safe, don't you worry. At least as far as the Novartis company knows, and they're the ones that make it, it isn't for long-term use simply because nobody has investigated to see whether or not the drug is safe when consumed over long periods of time. We don't know. The company that makes it says we don't know. Now, let me give you a little disclaimer here, a little overtime. Let's see what's going on here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers like Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola, and sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of the radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call the law school direct. It's area code 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967 or georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, so if you listen to a program and you say, well, God, that sounds kind of interesting, I'd like to send that to my Aunt Bessie. Well, just download it. It's on MP3 files, and it's done on 16 and 32-bit. If you're a radio station, you can take it off at 32-bit MP3, and if you don't have a computer that'll handle that, why, take it off at 16-bit, and most computers will take that off. And that's FM quality. It'll be CD music quality at 32, they tell me. And you can go back for years. I've been on the air now since 1999. I think all these programs are archived. I was looking here the other day. There's more than 2,000 programs on that archive. And they cover all kinds of subjects, a lot of subjects, you know, on health and various topics. Well, let me just tell you what we cover. We talk about law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events. So there'll be something on there that you want to hear. All right, now let's take a look here at the side effects. And here's a neat little exercise for you. I'm going to read you this paragraph over here, and then get yourself a Reader's Digest. Now, this is a real exercise. This will just blow you away. You go get a Reader's Digest, and as you're flipping through it, you'll come to an ad like Nexium. Some of these, you know, real popular drugs, you know, Vioxx or something. And then you turn the page, and you'll have to have, I've got a pair of glasses here. So I'm a coin collector. So I've got a 10 power loop. And I've got this 10 power right here on my visor. And I just pull that visor down and I can read fine print. Also helps me with reading contracts and things, you know, that people don't want me to read. Anytime I get print that I can't read, I don't wear glasses. You know, my eyesight's pretty good. I don't wear glasses, but I can't read that fine print. So I wear my 10 power loop here, and I flip it down, then I can read the fine print just like it was written in big double-spaced, you know, big type and double-spaced. So why don't you try that? You won't be able to read the fine print on the back side of the Nexium ad, but get your loop out, turn the page, and then go over to the section that talks about side effects and read them. I mean, if that doesn't blow your socks off, nothing will. Because here's the side effects to Ritalin. Listen to this. Now, there are unknown potential future side effects that could result from the long-term use of this Ritalin. Here's what Novartis admits. They probably know more than this, but here's what they at least admit to, are the known side effects that occur the first day the drug is consumed. The first day you take this drug, the first pill you take, here are the side effects that may affect you. And there's 33 of these. I got them in a list right here. 33. Things like nervousness and insomnia, hypertension, skin rash, fever. And then they've got some in here that I can't even pronounce. I mean, they've got symptoms in here. I haven't got a clue as to what the hell they are. And neither do you or anybody else. But they've got them all down here. Boy, they'll tell you, here's what's going to happen to you. Listen to this. Nervousness and insomnia are the most common adverse reactions, but are usually controlled by reducing dosage and omitting the drug in the afternoon or evening. Other reactions include hypersensitivity, including skin rash, urticaria, fever, arthralgia, exfoliative dermatitis, erythema multiforme with histopathological findings of necrotizing vasculitis. What do you think that is? Woo, boy, that sounds bad. I don't know what it is, but it doesn't sound good. And then it can cause thrombocytopenic, whatever that is, purpura, anorexia. Well, that doesn't sound too good. Starving yourself to death with anorexia, nausea, that's puking your guts out, dizziness, palpitations, your heart gets to beating real hard, headache, and then there's dyskinesia, whatever that is, drowsiness, blood pressure and pulse changes both up and down, tachycardia, angina, that's heart pain, cardiac arrhythmia. Remember we were talking about cardiac arrhythmia? And that you needed Tambacor to control cardiac arrhythmia? Hell, this Ritalin causes it. So I guess you can take the Ritalin and then you can take Tambacor to calm it down. Well, that's what you're doing anyway. See, you're taking the sugar out of the soda pop and the Cocoa Puffs, and that makes you bounce off the wall and fly off the ceiling, so you take the Ritalin to calm you down, which is going to give you the cardiac arrhythmia, for which you can now take Tambacol to slow you down and maybe sudden death, you know, something like that. Sounds so good, I can hardly wait to get down to my local Rexall store. Then it can cause abdominal pain, weight loss during prolonged therapy. Toxic psychosis has been reported. Although a definite causal relationship has not been established, the following have been reported in patients taking this drug. Instances of abnormal liver function ranging from transaminase elevation to hepatic coma. Well, I don't know what a hepatic is, but a coma isn't good. Isolated cases of cerebral arteritis and or occlusion. leukopenia and or anemia, transient depressed mood, a few instances of scalp hair loss, and in children, loss of appetite, abdominal pain, weight loss during prolonged therapy, insomnia, and tachycardia may occur more frequently. However, any of the other adverse reactions listed above may also occur. Now, that paragraph contains 33 adverse reactions. 33. And they've told you all these things, and nobody ever reads that. First of all, it's in fine print in Reader's Digest, and you can't read it without a 10-power loop. So, I mean, if you don't have a loop, or if you don't have a pretty powerful magnifying glass, you can't read the terms of the contract anyway. And I always figured that, you know, if somebody writes a letter to me in real fine print, they don't want me to read that. So if they don't want me to read that, they must not want me to know about it. And if they don't want me to know about it, they must be hiding something. And if they're hiding something from me, I always ask, why? How come they're hiding it from me? Well, they're really not hiding it from you. They don't want to. They want to give you legal notice so that you can't sue them, but they want to give you legal notice so that you can't read it. Somehow or another, that just doesn't sound good to me. And being the suspicious type that I am, anytime I see fine print, I don't sign. When I see fine print, I don't buy either. I want to know more about it. I was watching ABC the other day, and Peter Jennings had a series on for about 5 days concerning the contract terms. You know, you consumers go out to Best Buy and you buy something, or you go down and buy a car, and you're waiving a lot of your constitutionally protected rights, particularly your right to sue in many cases. You're agreeing to binding arbitration. This binding arbitration is all right, except that the arbitration company is selected by the company that you're buying the car from. And as they pointed out, that the arbitrators working for the arbitration company, working for the corporation, you know, the arbitration company works for General Motors. Well, you know, you can imagine if they get very many decisions that are against General Motors, they'll get another arbitration company, won't they? So it's a stacked deck against consumers, but then the consumer brings it upon himself by buying the stuff on time to start with. You know, I always say you're the proximate cause of your own injury. Guy goes out and he buys a $20,000 car, and he says, well, I'm buying the $20,000 car on time because I don't have the $20,000. But he's got the $500 a month for 60 months, which is how much money? I had a guy in here one time, he bought a Dodge van. He's paying $500 a month payments for 60 months. How much is that? $30,000. Yeah, he bought about a $15,000 or $20,000 van. He's paying $30,000 for it, about double over 6 years. Isn't that just special? I think it was a $20,000 van, $500 a month. Well, I always figured that if you had $500 a month for 60 months before the fact, if you didn't buy this van and you saved the $500 a month for 60 months, you'd have $30,000. Then you could walk in there with $20,000 cash, buy the van, own it, and then you'd have $10,000 to boot, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you be better off doing that? I know it's a wild new concept for most of you out there, but that's the way I do business, and I live a lot better that way, because instead of Chrysler Corporation having my $30,000, I got the van and $10,000 to boot. I'd do a little better than that. Instead of buying that van new, I let you buy it. And then let you drive it for 4 or 5 years, and then I come in and I buy it for about $5,000 or $6,000. See? And then, of course, it won't last me as long. See? But instead of me paying $30,000, I pay $5,000. And then it doesn't last me for 100,000 miles, it'll last me for 50,000. And then I throw it away. Just buy it and throw it away. Buy it and throw it away. And I save $25,000 each time I do that. That gives me lots of $5,000 bills to buy more vans with. I know it's kind of a strange new concept of economics for most people to think in terms like that, but let's get back here to drugs and think about buying drugs like this. Have you ever thought about what would life be like if my kid wasn't bouncing off the wall and didn't have ADHD? He wouldn't need this Ritalin. Not only would it save you a lot of money, it might actually save you a lot of grief and heartache. Especially hospital bills and doctor bills, and if this kid goes out and kills a bunch of people or gets himself into trouble in some way or another, like our boy having epilepsy for 20 years, that's pretty expensive, you know. Costs you a lot of money. And I don't know, boy, I bought a lot of drugs for that boy. And then after it's all said and done, 20 years later, he wakes up and says, well, I'd like to cure this epilepsy. Hell, he could have cured that epilepsy 20 years ago. Had a normal life. And you do that through diet. Do it through diet. So it's a wild new concept. Diet and herbs and crazy things like that. Well, I mean, hell, if this boy can drug his body up for 20 years and then control his epilepsy with diet 20 years after the fact, my common sense says he could have done it 20 years before the fact, couldn't he? But, of course, he didn't want to give up the sugar and spices and everything nice, and so, you know, you just got to make up your mind at some point in time that's what you're going to do. Well, now, notice how this issue of loss of appetite is right at the end of the list. Loss of appetite. You got this little kid, you know, he's 6, 7, 8 years old, and he doesn't want to eat. This issue of appetite alone should have parents wondering if the drug is worth the benefit. Think of this. You got a young child here. For a young child not to eat during the school day and then to return home after not having eaten anything but was consumed before the drug was administered in the morning means that the child will not be receiving the nutrition and vitamins that the food provides. And you know, little children's brains are still growing, and they need a lot of protein. A lot of protein. They need to eat. And if they don't eat and they don't get protein, their brain gets starved, and then their IQ goes down. So if you got a kid that's kind of dull, you know, you run across them. I got a couple guys that come over here and work every once in a while. And this kid comes over here. I call him a kid because I'm an old man, but he's in his 30s. Just dumb as a box of rocks. Nice young fella. But mentally, you know, he's a dullard. He's just a dullard. And I often wonder to myself, if that child had been raised in a home where they had fed him better, would he have been a little brighter? Would he have had a brighter future ahead of him? I guess we got to have some dullards to come over here and dig the ditches, but you know, that's... Couldn't the guy still dig the same ditches and be smarter at the same time? Just seems like to me it'd make more sense. But you've probably run across a few of them like that, and that's what happens to children. You'll see this all over the third world, where these children in their early formative years, you know, from birth to about 10, 12 years old, they don't get enough to eat. And they turn out to be stunted, and they're mental dullards. Cattle are the same way. You take a bucket raised calf, he turns out to be stunted. They're not worth the powder take to blow them to hell. Only thing you can do is cut them up, give them a number 9 overcoat and cellophane wrapping, and send them off to McDonald's and feed them to you poor folks out there. And then that gives you obesity and plugs up your veins and gives you all kinds of diseases and makes you a prime candidate for some other kind of drug. You know that crap that you eat in McDonald's, I wouldn't feed that to my dog. My dog eats better than most people here in America. My dogs eat better than most people in America eat. You know, assuming, of course, you're eating out of McDonald's. Now, just so you can understand that Novartis, or what they've told us, the Swiss multinational drug company, has warned all of you parents out there that if you give your child Ritalin, the drug could cause your children to lose their hair, give them abdominal pains, nausea, liver damage, cerebral arthritis, dizziness, palpitations, skin rashes, fever, cardiac arrhythmia, hypersensitivity, urticaria, fever, anorexia, headache, blood pressure and pulse changes, weight loss, anemia, a depressed mood, and insomnia. You know, that's quite a risk to take, I'd say, just so that the teacher won't call you at home and complain that he can't sit still in class. Now, if your kid can't sit still in class, it's either one, he's got a discipline problem. It could be he just needs to be slapped up alongside the head a couple of times and we'll wake him up, you know. Kid may be a little dull. I had a daddy like that. He slapped me up alongside the head there a couple of times. My daddy used to grab me and throw me into the wall. Well, when you hit the wall with sufficient velocity, you will bounce off of it. And by golly, I'll tell you, when you bounce off that wall, you won't be able to stand up. So you'll fall to the floor and the old man gets belled out, just wail the daylights out of me. Now, it only happened to me a couple of three times. I wasn't as dull as a lot of people give me credit for. Around my daddy, you had to be pretty smart and learn fast because you might not live to grow up to be a big boy if you got around my daddy very long. So I didn't have a discipline problem. I can assure you that there was no discipline problem in the Gordon household. And I didn't have an attention deficit disorder either because if I got a note, you know, from the teacher, that was the worst thing that a teacher could do to me. Now, those teachers, they could whip and wail the daylights. They used to have paddles in school when I was a kid. They could sit there and wail and beat on me all day long. I couldn't care less. But when that teacher wrote a note home to my daddy, that just terrorized me. Because when my daddy got that note, he was going to wail the daylights out of me for causing a problem in school. That was number one. And if you'd have said, gee, Dad, I've got ADHD, you know, I've got this terrible disease and I need a drug, you know, he'd have straightened me right out with that drug thing. That would have been the end of that. But I just wanted to point out that if we could live 50, 60 years ago without drugs, I'll just bet you could probably do it today. Now, 75% of the children in public schools are living without the drugs. So that just goes to show you that the other 25% could, but there's got to be a problem there, doesn't there? Something's wrong. And I would suggest that you get to the cause of the problem and then eliminate that cause. If you could do that, you wouldn't need Ritalin. You wouldn't need drugs. Now, I'm going to give a little plug here for this guy's book. Remember, this is Thomas J. Moore, Deadly Medicine, Simon and Schuster, published in 1995. Here's another one I want to give you. It's called The International Forecaster. International Forecaster. And it's published by Robert Chapman, $129 a year. $129.95, some $130 bill. Now, I just got this one. It was 35 pages. Last week's was 40 pages. And this guy covers a whole lot more than just economic news. Here was this 4 or 5 page section in here on Ritalin. And this is a dynamite newsletter. And I'm going to recommend it to all of you out there. You know, I've recommended The Privateer and the Money Changer and Don McIlvaney and others. And they're all good. And I don't take anything away from them. I recommend them and recommend them highly. But I'd never gotten this International Forecaster before. You know, there's only 200 or 300 of these newsletters out there, and I haven't read them all. But this guy, Bob Chapman, puts out one whale of a good newsletter. And you can get to him here. It's Robert Chapman. Robert Chapman. Let's see if I can get to the last page here. At yahoo.com. It's easy enough. No, it's called International Forecaster. Let me back that up. International Forecaster at yahoo.com. International Forecaster at yahoo.com. Yeah, I'm just about out of time. I got to leave it right here. So let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. See you back here tomorrow night. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.